and we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 12th, 2017. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my animal-loving vegan co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
We will also have some guests here today. Jillian and Kingston Walters will be in studio. Stay tuned. We will hear more from them in just a bit.
And it's Mother's Day this weekend.
Yes, so this is our Mother's Day show. We're featuring interviews with inspirational Vancouver mothers who are raising vegan animal rights activist kids. Stay tuned in about 15 minutes for a chat with Jillian and Kingston, as well as animal rights lawyer and mother of two, Anna Pippis. We will also speak with Gary Charbonneau, creator of the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, regarding the heated debate over the recent park board ban on cetaceans in Stanley Park. And now for some events. Defend exploited circus animals tonight at the PNE Fairground from 6:30 to 9 o'clock, 2901 East Hastings Street. The Royal Canadian Circus is having animals perform tricks such as jumping through fiery hoops, and animal rights advocates will be there to educate the attendees peacefully. Signs and leaflets will be provided. Just bring your big heart and a voice to speak to the crowd. And tomorrow at the Vancouver Aquarium, and at marine parks all over the world, join activists for the annual Empty the Tanks event. Hundreds of people typically attend the event at the Vancouver Aquarium, and all the media will be there. You don't need to bring anything, but are welcome to bring a sign or a speech for the megaphone. Meet at 11 a.m. until 2 p.m., rain or shine, bring your umbrella. More info can be found online at Empty the Tanks Vancouver. There's never been a more important time for us to speak out for captive animals in Vancouver. You will hear from animal rights lawyers, scientists, teachers, filmmakers, activists, and more. Dress warmly, bring an umbrella, and we will see you at 11 a.m. And just to let you know, everybody, this is the reason I became a vegan and a full-time animal rights activist. I attended Empty the Tanks years ago because I just saw a poster up somewhere advertising it, and I attended, and I wasn't vegan yet, and after attending that event, realized I was being speciesist for spending my time advocating for animals who are held captive in these facilities, yet don't have it nearly as bad as the animals that we raise for food. So it's quite an inspirational event. And so let's play our interview now with Gary Charbonneau, creator of the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. He has some issues with the misleading rhetoric from the aquarium's CEO regarding the park board ban on cetaceans in Stanley Park. I spoke with him yesterday. Let's play that interview now. So today we're speaking with Gary Charbonneau, a local filmmaker of Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, which you can find online. And he's speaking to us today in regards to the recent park board decision to ban the importation and display of cetaceans on parkland at the Vancouver Aquarium. And Gary, you're finding this quite controversial because you believe there's some deception around this topic. Can you tell us how you're feeling about that?
I can. And thanks for having me today, Jen. I've been studying this issue for approximately 3 years now, quite in depth as well. And what Mr. Nightingale is saying is absolutely untrue. He's telling the public that without captivity at the Vancouver Aquarium, that they would have to euthanize animals like Chester. But what Mr. Nightingale and the aquarium has omitted is that when they found Chester in Tofino, that multiple facilities in North America offered a permanent home for Chester. And so they don't mention the fact that, you know, rescues on our coast would always have a home somewhere in the world at an accredited facility because they're always looking for display animals. So that was disingenuous for him to, you know, to what we would call fear-mongering the public so he can keep his captivity program. Regarding the rescue center, there's a little bit of temerity there with Mr. Nightingale, simply because the rescue center has always struggled under Mr. Nightingale's management. the rescue center received less than 2% funding from their general revenues, which is why it's always struggling. They do not fund it properly. And in the past 5 to 6 years, when the aquarium earned and acquired over $250 million, which is approximately $30 million a year in revenues, now they're at 37, and they also brought in $100 million separate from that, which totals to be about $250 million over the past 5 to 6 years, as I just said. And during this time, with that kind of money, at the rescue center, they were doing animal operations and procedures out of a garden shed. And so it's strange for Mr. Nightingale to say that the rescue center would suffer when, in fact, it's already suffering because he underfunds it.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about that rescue center, because I know that the public is generally under the perception that a lot of the rescue and research is happening at the Vancouver Aquarium, but there are two facilities. So there's the Vancouver Aquarium, which many animal rights people believe is more of a circus-like zoo, and then there is the Marine Mammal Rescue Center, which you and activists do support and want more funding going to. So can you describe to us what it would look like if the public was able to go and look around at that Marine Mammal Rescue Center? Where is that located? What does it look like?
Well, it's very interesting that you do bring this up as far as its location in itself. It is separate from the Vancouver Aquarium, and it's located on Port land, not too far from Crab Park. Now, the Vancouver Aquarium doesn't have visitors attend the rescue center because they use the excuse that the animals are recovering, which it sounds to be fair, but when you go down to, or if you research other rescue centers on our coast like Sausalito or Los Angeles, they have no admission, they have no captive program, and they're rescuing 450 to 1,000 animals per year, and yet we boast about 170. 170 is way too low for the amount of money that is coming into the Vancouver Aquarium, and considering we have a captive program that Mr. Nightingale himself says funds the rescue center, how is it that other places don't have a captive program, don't charge admission, but they're saving and rescuing and rehabilitating a lot more animals than us? Which goes back to my first point that it's completely underfunded. And those rescue centers have hundreds of thousands of visitors. Any animal that's recovering that can't be near the public or needs quiet is obviously in a different location from the public. But the other ones that are recovering, there's a distance, there's the fences, they have a whole bunch of dry enclosures, they have pool enclosures for these animals. When you look at their facilities, they are world-class facilities. And when you compare it to ours, our entire rescue center can literally fit in the parking lot of these other rescue centers. That's how disheveled and small ours is compared to an actual leading class facility, which is what Mr. Nightingale calls ours, a leading class facility, but they've been doing operations out of a garden shed for the past 5 to 6 years, even in the wintertime. And this is why I believe that they don't allow visitors to go, because they'll realize that this $37 million a year institute that also raised $100 million separate from that, this is what we have. We're now doing, he's now moved it from the garden shed to a mobile trailer on the same piece of property. And we have, I think, a couple pools and some blue bins and some tarps, and this is supposed to be leading class. Mm-hmm. It's very deceptive what Mr. Nightingale is doing, and I find it quite audacious for him to say that it's going to suffer now if he doesn't have captivity, when he's had captivity for 50 years and it suffered. So it's very misleading.
You know, and you're not kidding when you say the garden shed and the plastic Tupperware-like bins. I've seen more elaborate setups for a weekend concert than this Marine Mammal Rescue Center, which has been around for years. I've seen pictures. It's really shoddy.
It is. It's, like I said, I personally went there, and I was quite surprised at how small it was, and just the equipment, the tarps, a couple mobile trailers. I mean, there isn't even a building there. It's pretty sad situation. And so, as I said, for Mr. Nightingale to start, and like I said, the reason why he claims it's leading edge because he doesn't allow anybody to see it. And on top of that, when you say leading edge, if you actually compare it to other facilities, you realize that, you know, when you're you're working out of a mobile trailer, this is not leading edge. And so, you know, we need to invest millions of dollars into the rescue center. It needs a new location. And in my strong opinion, we require new management that will actually give it the attention that it needs. And I think that it could stand alone from the aquarium, like these other two. So I believe if we had proper management and we had a new location, the rescue center could be self-funded like the other ones. We would be rescuing a lot more animals, and it's under the management of Mr. Nightingale, it is suffering.
I agree. And I really do wish the public would scratch a little bit beneath the surface whenever there is big money being made. First of all, the Vancouver Aquarium is not your typical nonprofit. It's legally called a private nonprofit, which means they don't have to spend a certain percentage of their revenue on their stated mandate like a nonprofit would. So that's deceiving. I also feel that you're correct when you say that there needs to be a change in management. Because clearly the management at the Vancouver Aquarium, as described in your documentary, Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, has shown a history of deception. And this continues to this very day in letting the public feel that this park board ban is going to result in dead animals, which it couldn't be further from the truth. So while we all do support the Marine Mammal Rescue Center as animal rights advocates, we don't want someone that we can't trust running it, right? It's been proven that it's not working.
Well, Mr. Nightingale has even gone so far at the Senate hearings and on the radio today, as a matter of fact. It is absolutely preposterous what he has said, and I'm hoping that the public can start really like listening to Mr. Nightingale, because if you actually stop and listen to his words, you realize that it's impossible. Like a lot of the things that he says is simply not feasible. And what he had mentioned in Senate and what he had said on the radio today is that his whales don't do tricks. That is a complete misrepresentation, because that's what they do when they're walking on their tail, when they're spitting water at children, when they jump in tandem together, all on command.
Right.
These are tricks. These are trained tricks to entertain the public. This is not what they do naturally in the wild. I'm sure there's some of the things that they do, but certainly not on command.
And
something that they do.
He also denied that these are shows, and I went on their website today, and there's a category on the website called shows, and every animal that does the shows is listed, and you can click on it. So the deception is just so, it's so obvious, it's so right there, and this is my plea to the public. Please always dig a little bit deeper when somebody tells you something, when they serve to profit immensely from what they're saying. And consider that the animal rights advocates not only are not making money off of spending their lives fighting for animals, we're actually spending our money and all of our free time to get the truth out. There is nothing in it for us. And I do sometimes miss my life before being an animal rights advocate, because I had more time for myself. And I am spending money to educate the public about these lies. And so we just have to wrap this up. So Gary, can you please give a call to action to the listeners today? What can they do?
I would strongly take into consideration, you know, if I was the general public, the fact that it wasn't just this park board that wanted to ban captivity. In 2014, the last park board wanted to ban captivity after an intensive 3-day public hearing with all kinds of different scientists, a wildlife veterinarian, and they had decided that captivity should end because the Vancouver Aquarium has a 90% infant death rate. In the wild, it's 20 to 30%. So if you can't take care of them inside, how are you supposed to conserve them on the outside? So that alone should really shut this whole program down. Then there's the fact that the last 5 cetaceans born there all died. So it's getting worse. 2 belugas just died. They don't know the reasons why. Their necropsy about Hannah was wrong. They said that she had died of causes natural in the wild, which was completely untrue. There wasn't a single wild Pacific white-sided dolphin that had a necropsy that showed the same symptoms. So, you know, they're calling themselves experts, but it's just it's a failed program, and these animals are dying at very young ages. So when you look at that and you look at what's happened with the park board, the call to action would really be to send an email to the park board commissioner saying that you support ending captivity. And if you want to go so far, as part of as a member of the public. You may also write to the aquarium and just say that you don't appreciate the one-sided rhetoric and the fact that Mr. Nightingale and the aquarium are omitting options that are more viable than euthanasia. So, like sending an animal like Chester to an accredited facility that offered him a permanent home. I'm sure the public would rather have that than have the Vancouver Aquarium euthanize him because they couldn't have him. So, yeah, send an email to Park Board and support their decision.
Okay, and that's at vancouver.ca. Just look up Park Board Commissioners and you can send the email right there online. So thank you so much, Gary, for your time. And please, everybody, check out vancouveraquariumuncovered.com. And Gary, you are not being sued for slander
or defamation,
which must mean, obviously, that everything in your film is indisputable. So please keep that in mind.
Yes, my film has been up for over a year and nothing has been removed. Except for what the judge had asked me to remove, but not that it was because it was wrong. The judge wasn't certain about the copyright and said, let's see what happens at trial. But we're appealing that and we're waiting for a decision. But otherwise than that, as you said correctly, the Vancouver Aquarium never sued me for defamation or slander, which proves that the information within my film is actually accurate. And what they're suing me for is not any inaccuracies. They're simply saying that, oh, there's copyright infringement. But the strange part is the very photos that I'm using, the media is using as well to speak disparagingly of the aquarium. So why is it that I have to take it down, but the news can use it, or mm-hmm. anybody else could use it? So this is why we're appealing it.
Right.
But, yes, you are correct.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Gary. I'm sure this won't be the last we'll hear from you. And best of luck with everything.
Thank you very much for your time, Jen.
Thanks. Bye-bye. So that was Gary Charbonneau, Vancouver filmmaker who created the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, which you can find online at vancouveraquariumuncovered.com. And so in honor of our Mother's Day show, we are featuring interviews with local moms who are raising vegan animal rights activist kids. First, we begin with Anna Pippis, a vegan animal rights lawyer and the director of farmed animal advocacy for Animal Justice Canada. Prior to this job, she held the position of Director of Legal Advocacy for Mercy for Animals Canada, which resulted in obtaining previously unprecedented animal cruelty charges against animal abusers. Anna has spoken about farmed animal law issues before numerous legal and non-legal audiences, and in countless print, television, online, and radio publications, and is a frequent guest on Animal Voices Radio. Anna also serves as the strategic advisor for We Animals. She holds degrees in law from the University of Toronto and psychology from the University of BC. On top of this, Anna lends her voice and expertise as an activist in the Vancouver community. She's raising two vegan boys, Harlan, age 4, and Alistair, almost 2. She organizes monthly vegan family meetups and has an online resource for busy families to cook quick and easy nutritious vegan meals. Let's listen to our interview with Anna now. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Anna.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So can you tell us how long you've been vegan and what brought you to this way of life?
Sure. So I've been vegetarian for most of my life as a pretty young kid. I was about 10 or 11 when eating animals didn't really sit well with me. And I stopped without really giving it too much thought. It didn't feel right to me. Fortunately, I had very supportive parents who accommodated my wacky diet. It was sort of unusual back then, but it was really not something that was part of my identity. I didn't understand much about farming. I just really loved animals and sort of theoretically didn't want to eat them. But I ate a ton of dairy. Not a ton of eggs, but I definitely ate eggs. I certainly ate a lot of cheese. So then when I was a little bit older in my 20s, I learned about what was happening to animals, and I was horrified. I really hadn't thought about it, and once I turned my mind to it, it was like a light bulb went off. It made total sense to me. Of course, when you farm animals, when you use them as commodities, when they're used for profit, of course they're going to suffer. These are not pets. These are not beloved family members. These are units of production. They are tools used to produce huge volumes of cheap meat. And I was really horrified by what I learned, and I wanted nothing to do with it. I was upset that nobody had told me. I was upset that I had known vegans who hadn't sort of you know, hit me over the head with it and said, what are you doing eating dairy and eggs? That's so cruel. Now, of course, I understand why they didn't, because the world is not welcoming to people being really sort of forthcoming with the message. When you tell people, hey, dairy and eggs cause animal cruelty, people get really upset with you. So it's a tough message. It's a tough cross to bear. It's hard work. But anyway, so yeah, so I immediately became vegan, but not just vegan. I became an animal rights activist. I became somebody who knew that it was my life's mission and my life's work to expose what's happening to animals and to try to persuade people to care about it and to join the fight to try to end it. I thought it was going to be really easy at first. I thought as soon as people learn about what's happening to animals, like I did, they're going to be horrified and they're going to immediately stop as well. So I thought this is simply a matter of, you know, providing the information. But I learned that, you know, it's really not that simple, and it really is going to take my entire life to dedicate to this cause.
So when you went into law school, was this the plan from the start, or did you not yet know what area of law you'd be working in?
Well, I went... It was part of the plan, but it's tough. I mean, animal rights law, certainly back then when I went into law school, it was 2008. So that's sort of a lifetime ago in the world of animal rights. And it really was not an area of law, and it's sort of still not. I knew that I was very, very interested in animal rights law. In fact, that was one of the reasons why I went to law school, was learning about that as a field of law, particularly in the United States. But I went to law school because having worked in the field of social work, I knew that a lot of problems that we face as a society are the result of laws and policies that can be changed. And instead of sort of triaging emergencies, I wanted to be solving problems on a wider scale, on a societal level. So the impetus for me going to law school was to be able to make the biggest change. I've always known that I want my life to be about being of service and improving the world and helping others. And I wasn't sure that if I could do that in animal rights, but it was always part of the plan. I also worked for the 3 years that I was in law school. I was pretty involved with the refugee clinic, legal aid at my law school, and I was also a research assistant in the women's rights and reproductive and sexual health law program in my school. So the common theme is using my skills and as a tool to help vulnerable individuals. As it happened, I was able to build a career in animal rights, partly because I was so sort of involved as a volunteer and just sort of creating opportunities, and partly because I have a very supportive partner who pulls, you know, more of the financial weight in the family and is able to support me in a career that is not quite as lucrative as traditional law careers.
And you have two sweet young boys, Harlan and Alistair, who've been vegan since birth. Many people think that a vegan diet is restrictive or that their picky kids wouldn't eat vegan food. So can you tell us what some of your children's favorite foods are?
Definitely. So my kids eat a huge variety of food. They eat tons of fruits and vegetables. They eat whole grains. They eat beans, lentils, nuts and seeds. So a typical day in my household might be blueberry oatmeal with pumpkin seeds or hemp seeds for breakfast, or whole grain toast, sprouted grain toast with peanut butter or almond butter and maybe applesauce on top, or organic jam. Then lunch will often be leftovers from the night before. So those would be, you know, lunches and dinners are kind of going to look the same. But those are going to be things like pasta with lots of vegetables, or tacos. We have lots of stir fries, vegetables and tofu-based stir fries. My four-year-old says his favorite soup food is lentil soup. So we make lentil soup with brown lentils. And tons of vegetables, zucchini, tomatoes, spinach, all kinds of stuff, and he gobbles that right up. My kids also love chickpea coconut curry and, you know, any kind of like red lentil soup, because red lentils are so yummy. They disintegrate, and it's great for kids, especially kids before they have a full set of teeth to chew. Mm-hmm. And then they snack on fruit. They love fruit. We buy frozen mango, frozen organic strawberry, so they're sort of cheaper and fresh in season all year round. They eat nuts. They love almonds, walnuts, cashews, pumpkin seeds, whole grain crackers with hummus. Hummus is big in our house. We make our own hummus with chickpeas, lemon juice, tahini and a little bit of salt. And they also love tofu. So what we do is we marinate the tofu very simply in tamari or soy sauce and then just pan fry it until it's brown. Super simple, super fast, and really delicious. They'll eat tons of that.
Awesome. And I've had your lentil soup. It's so good. You're a good cook.
Oh, thanks.
And everybody can find what you cook on Anna Cooks Vegan on Instagram, right?
Yes, actually, I changed the handle. It's Easy Animal Free. So if you're on Instagram, you can check out Easy Animal Free, because I realized that a big barrier for a lot of people is like, yes, they get it. Okay, hurting animals is bad. You know, it's really simple, right? We should be kind to others. We should be kind to animals. It's super simple. But the barrier for people is not knowing what to eat. And because we do eat such a delicious and fulfilling and varied and easy, I don't have a lot of time to be in the kitchen. So it's all super fast recipes. Because we eat so well, I wanted to show people, look, this is how easy it is to be vegan and how delicious it is and how varied it is. And you too can fit it into your life. So I just post what we eat on Instagram stories. Sometimes you can follow along as I'm cooking so you can see what's happening. And there's tons of meal ideas there, including recipes or even methods.
And if you find time to do it, then nobody else has an excuse, because I don't know anybody busier than you are.
Right. Well, exactly. I do have a pretty full life, so if I can do it, you can definitely do it too. Right. It's just a matter of priorities and being positive and knowing that you can do it, believing in yourself, you can do it.
And speaking of your four-year-old, I remember walking to preschool with you and your son Harlan one day last autumn. Harlan had a cloth lunch bag that said no animals were harmed for this lunch, and he has a t-shirt that says I don't eat my pals. The shirt has images of typical farmed animals on it. I often think of how unique it is that you and your husband Arden are raising kids, vegan kids, in a household where they're going to be exposed to a lot of discussion on animal rights advocacy, and I'm excited to hear how this will affect others who may be inspired by your family as the years go by. What kind of reactions do you get from the non-vegan community, such as parents at daycare or at the park, when you mention that your family's vegan?
You know, people are actually mostly just curious. They're mostly interested. I think that we're a pretty typical family, you know, in a lot of ways. We don't appear to be particularly counterculture. We hide it well, I guess. So we're a really normal family, and my kids are very obviously super healthy and energetic. They're very friendly. You know, they say hello to people when we pass them on the sidewalk. They chat with people at the playground. They're great at making friends. They walk right up to adults and kids and introduce themselves and invite them to play. So I mean, it's like very apparent right away that there's nothing wrong with my kids. They're healthy and they're active and they're friendly and they're smart. So I don't think anyone could ever look at them and see a problem. I think people are mostly curious. I think veganism and plant-based eating are starting to seep into the consciousness. So honestly, I don't get a lot of backlash. On the flip side, I do get people saying, oh, that's really cool. That's really interesting. We'd love to eat more, more vegetables, more plant-based food. It's sort of, that's the soft introduction. And we start chatting about food. You know, maybe it would be a different story if my kids weren't, you know, so obviously super healthy. Maybe I would be feeling more of the backlash. Maybe it would be different if I didn't live in East Van, where it's sort of, you know, we're welcoming to alternative ways of life. I'm not sure what it is, but I definitely feel more support and curiosity than any sort of backlash. And if there's backlash, they're not saying it to my face.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, you are the kind of person who's capable of juggling so much. A mother to two children, the director of Animal Justice's Farmed Animal Advocacy, and strategic advisor for We Animals. You frequently write articles about animal rights issues and veganism for major news media, and you have social media websites dedicating to helping people cook vegan meals. And you, on top of this, you also organize monthly vegan family meetups. And within the animal rights community, I know that you are one of the go-to people for advice and assistance, and you always somehow manage to respond promptly with a unique perspective. How do you organize your time to fit all of this in?
Well, so I made a commitment when I was in law school that I would always use my skills to help people who are helping animals. I really, really love the animal rights community. I love people who see what's happening to animals, and whatever alchemy is at play, they just get it. They understand that it's an urgent emergency. They understand they can do something about it, and they take it upon themselves to do something about it. So I feel a huge amount of overwhelming love for for this community with all of its imperfections, and I want to do whatever I can to facilitate it and support it and nurture it and encourage it moving in the right direction. So for me, it sort of comes very naturally. It's my pleasure to be of service to this community that I love so much. You know, I think it helps that I do eat a healthy plant-based diet. I'm vegan first and foremost for the animals, no question. But when you go vegan, you start reading labels, you start learning about food systems, and you sort of naturally, I think, gravitate towards eating more nutrient-dense foods. And I have a lot of energy because of that. I wake up and I feel good and I go all day long. And I also think that living, people think, oh God, going vegan, it's going to be, you know, so hard. You give up so much more than you gain. Living a life of service gives your life meaning and fulfillment that you don't have when you're sort of only living for yourself and not looking past your own nose. And I get it. I've been there. I know how overwhelming, you know, certain lifestyle changes can feel. For me, veganism wasn't overwhelming, but certainly other lifestyle changes, exercise, for example, I had to really struggle to incorporate exercise into my life. And now that I've done it, I'm like, oh yeah, totally. You know, this is so great and so easy. But so I get that incorporating a lifestyle change can be hard. But I think that what people need to understand is that when you give your life over to something bigger than yourself, and when you give yourself to be of service to others and service to furtherance of good in the world, you feel really good, and it's highly motivating. I think that sometimes people feel like they don't have enough time, but it's really not a scarcity of time. It's a scarcity of motivation. It's a scarcity of the energy, but you gain energy and motivation when you give your life over to service.
I totally agree. And my life before being a vegan animal rights activist now seems quite meaningless. And I love this lifestyle, though of course it comes with its frustrations, but it's a life of purpose, and I think we're all seeking that, right?
Exactly. I mean, exactly. Isn't that what we all want? We want meaning. We want fulfillment. We want happiness. We want joy. That's what we all want. And you gain that when you join the animal rights movement. It's such a noble cause, and it's something that we can do something about. There are hundreds of millions of animals suffering horribly, suffering and dying. And you can do something about that. What greater thing to do with your life than that?
Mm-hmm. Well, as a final question, because this is our Mother's Day interview, what unique Mother's Day message do you have for our listeners out there today from your perspective as a full-time animal rights activist and a vegan?
Well, I think that, I mean, sort of mothers don't have the final say on concept of motherhood. Motherhood is about loving and nurturing. But certainly as a mother, I can say that separating mothers from babies in animal agriculture is a disgrace. It's a horrible thing to do to another person. And you don't need to be a mother or even a parent or father to understand this. You simply need to be somebody who has cared deeply about another, whether it's a sibling or a cat or a friend or whoever it is in your life. I mean, just imagine if not just the sort of the obvious one is dairy, right? Mother cows have their babies taken away from them at birth. It causes immense distress to mother and calf. This is not in dispute. Dairy farmers will admit this. Yes, it causes them distress.
Even on humane farms, I just want everyone to know.
Even on humane farms, organic dairy is no better. It's the exact same thing. Your family-run farm, your organic, humane, so-called humane dairy farm, they are taking the babies away at birth, and the breast milk is stolen for consumers to consume. I mean, it's straight out of a horror film. What a terrible thing to do to another individual. But it's not just dairy, right? It's also broiler chickens raised for meat. These babies are raised into hatcheries. They'll never know the comfort of their mothers. These chicken meat farms are like daycare has gone crazy. There's no mothers. There's no nurturing. It's just a bunch of babies peeping there with no comfort. In the wild and natural conditions, chicks would be tucked under their mother's wings. They would get the nurturing of their mothers. Their mothers would peep to them in the shell, and they would peep back. I mean, that's the mother-child bond, and it's such a perversion that we exploit it for something so unnecessary as replaceable dairy, you know, chicken meat, eggs. I mean, what is this to us? This is replaceable food. Eat something else. You'll be better for it. The planet will be better for it. And you don't have to pervert families.
Mm-hmm. And you're teaching your children a valuable lesson about respect and compassion toward animals, which people already do teach their children, but in a more of a speciesist way.
Exactly. I think that, you know, I see a ton of children's books. As a mother, I'm at libraries and community centers, and these children's books so frequently have not just animals, but farm animals. And the farm animals are so happy. It's all different species of animals all together, you know, in a family on the farm, loving the out of doors. You know, there's no slaughterhouse. There's no corpses. There's no dismemberment. It's just this really sort of false fairyhood fantasy depiction of what farming is. That's just simply not what it's like. I mean, it's very, very different. But this is what we're teaching our children. And I think that, you know, I haven't sat my children down to watch Earthlings, of course, but I do talk to them in age-appropriate ways about the importance of being kind to others and how cows, you know, baby cows want to drink their mommy's milk just like you want to drink your mommy's milk. So we drink the milk that's nice for cows, kind of, you know, we drink soy milk. So I talk to them about it in those terms so that it makes sense for them, because I believe that they, you know, they have a right to true information, and depicting animal farming in completely false fantasy ways is setting them up for a lifetime of disappointment. And they'll be just as disappointed and angry and traumatized as I was when I learned the truth about animal farming. I want better for my children.
I remember feeling I wish somebody had told me that sooner. And in the beginning of our interview, when you mentioned that you didn't understand why the vegans didn't hit you over the head with the truth about the egg and the dairy industry, I felt the same way about a longtime vegan friend of mine who never told me those details. And I know for sure that if she'd told me, I would have made the change on the spot. I'm not blaming her. It was my own job to seek out the easily available evidence online about what happens in these industries. But I really did believe in the humane meat lies. And I'm not saying that I thought it was cruelty-free, but I did think that I needed those products for nutrients. And I did think that they were treated pretty well up until slaughter. And I also thought they had separate slaughterhouses, humane slaughterhouses, where the animals didn't know it was coming and it was really quick and fast. And that's a lie.
Right. I know. I mean, and that's so true. And I think for, you know, you and I, we share that in common. It's like, why didn't somebody, like, why were the vegans just baking cupcakes? Like, why didn't they like smack sandwich?
Why didn't they advocate? I mean, yeah.
Right. And it's like, and now I get it, of course. But for me, that has played into how I advocate. I do think it's important to be the change you want to see in the world. And what I want is a world of positive, compassionate animal advocates who are eating plants. And so that's the change that I try to exude. I try to be the type of person that I want others to be, not angrily insist they be it. But I am angry. And I think it's okay to say plainly, not mincing words, you know, farming animals is animal cruelty, and I won't support it. I typically avoid meals where animals are being consumed because it horrifies me. I don't think it's my job to make other people feel comfortable about exploiting animals. I think that vegans are often, we're very sensitive, right? We're vegan because we're sensitive. And so we're sensitive to what other people say about, it's going to be a vegan. Vegans always tell you, right? Like we hear all these negative stereotypes, but the reality is, that's their stuff. That's just what they're saying to feel more comfortable about their complicity in the system that they know to be wrong. If they can make it us having a problem, us having a bad attitude, us being a bad messenger, you know, us doing X, Y, Z wrong, then it's easy for them to continue to do it. But no apologies. Sure, be positive, be inclusive, be compassionate, but don't be apologetic. Don't hide your words. Don't feel like you need to allow people to feel comfortable when what they're doing is horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Such powerful words from such a strong woman. And you are a real inspiration to not only mothers everywhere on Mother's Day, but everybody within this animal rights community and everybody that you speak to. And I'm so grateful to know you, Anna. Thank you so much for all your work.
Thank you. And I'm so grateful to know you as well, Jen. Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Are you an idiot? I know I am. Are you always forgetting things like your keys, your name, or the capital of Manitoba? Well, fret no longer. Through the wonder of science, we are now able to offer you automatic withdrawals. What on earth is that, you may well ask? It, my friend, is when a predetermined amount is taken out monthly from either your credit card or your bank account. We are indeed living in the future. Personally, it has radically changed my life. No longer do I stay up all night with the dreaded thought of forgetting to renew my annual Co-op Radio membership. It is done for me, like a faithful friend or a hyper-intelligent computer. Become a sustaining member by signing up for Automatic Withdrawals! For more information, please go to our website at coopradio.org. Automatic Withdrawals!
In studio today for our Mother's Day show, we have two vegan animal rights advocates, mother and son Jillian and Kingston Walters. This mother and son duo are an inspiration to parents and children everywhere. Jillian is a full-time single mom to 13-year-old Kingston, who has learning differences, yet embraces every opportunity to grow as an individual and create positive change in his community. Together, they are heavily involved in daily activism for some of the most vulnerable and exploited beings on this planet, animals. Jillian graduated from Seattle University in 2006 with a Master's of Arts degree in counseling psychology. As an artist, therapist, and author, she uses her skills to assist the animal rights movement. Her children's book, King Zoom and the Great Seal Pup Rescue, was published in 2015, and she has another one on the way. Kingston has a positive, extroverted, approachable personality, which is truly an asset to the animal rights community. He easily engages with other children, offering informative leaflets at the Vancouver Aquarium and speaking out for animals publicly. He's recently begun teaching himself video editing and broadcasting skills. Recently, Kingston had the chance to meet Jane Goodall and used this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to ask her opinion on ocean sanctuaries for cetaceans held captive in aquariums and zoos. And I just want to mention, Kingston just turned 12 years old. Welcome, Kingston and Jillian.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, nice to have you here.
Good to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you here. I'm excited to have you both here for our Mother's Day show. Now, I'm curious, you're both vegan. How long have each of you been vegan? How did you come to this humane lifestyle choice?
Well, I've been vegan since I was born.
That's awesome.
Wow. How old are you again?
I'm 13.
Oh, that's you're 13. I'm sorry.
You've been vegan longer than I have. That's cool. What about you, Jillian?
I've been vegan for about 30 years. I was raised in a household, like most of us, that ate all kinds of meat and dairy for every meal. It was kind of having the protein as the center of your meal was very important. And I also grew up in a household where we didn't question what was on our plate. We didn't question anything, actually. And it wasn't just our family. It was the consumption of meat and dairy was an integral part of life for school, family gatherings, and holidays. I never heard the word vegetarian or vegan until my late adolescence. And as a teen, I began to search for the truth, and I found that it was often hidden from children. And I didn't like that feeling of being kept in the dark, so I started to question everything. A few moments stand out for me that were turning points. And one of them was when we had a summer camp that ended with a spaghetti dinner. And during the dinner, the man said that the sauce was made from deer meat that he had killed the week before. And I was like, oh my God, I could barely chew what was in my mouth. I wanted to spit it out, but I was embarrassed. I didn't want to be unpolite. So I just tried to choke it down, and I never ate deer again, but I still didn't see that eating deer meat and eating cow meat was the same thing until a bit later. A more defining moment was when I heard sounds coming from the road across the street, and the screams I heard were nothing that I've heard before. And it broke my heart. I started to cry. It was a truck full of pigs from across the street that were going, I guess, to slaughter, my mom told me later. And I can still hear the screams. And from that day on, I vowed never to eat meat again. So that's kind of where my life as a vegan began. Started out with the meat, then the dairy. And back in the early 90s, there was not much support. So I kind of got schooled by PETA and got a subscription to Vegetarian Times, and thus began my journey.
Sounds like the beginning of my journey too. Those two resources, Vegetarian Times. I remember that one. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Jillian, I met you and Kingston both through animal rights activism. And can you tell me how long you've been involved in this and what got you started?
I've actually been involved in activism since I was a teen. I did my first protest at the Nanoose Bay testing range. No nukes. I remember holding a sign that said no nukes. My choice to follow a vegan life was and still is that I don't want to participate in the harming of any other life. So when I began to understand the true horror of what happens so that we can eat, wear, and use animals for entertainment, I was compelled to do more than just abstain. My activism began with boycotting circuses, zoos, and aquariums, attending protests, signing petitions, sending letters, and being sort of a quiet role model. When I became a mother, however, I felt even more drawn to being more active in the animal rights movement. The most important lesson I wanted to teach my son was to question everything and to seek the truth. I wanted to give him the opportunities that I never had and the space to see what lies behind the glossy propaganda. It was actually the movie Blackfish that really motivated me to act. I had grown up seeing Tilly at Sealand of the Pacific and watching Scanner perform at the Vancouver Aquarium, and I had boycotted aquariums for a long time, but it was that movie that just pushed me over the edge. I was broken when I saw that emotionally, and I vowed at that moment that I would use my voice and my pen to join the movement to end captivity. And from that day, Kinks and I started coming out to the protests here in Vancouver and meeting like-minded people and finding that there were other events to attend to spread awareness. Kingston has a natural ability, a genuine sensitivity that began early in life. I remember on his 6th birthday, he had children donate money to Doctors Without Borders for the Haiti earthquake. He's done several summers of lemonade stands to raise money. And he rescued a harbor seal pup that Jen mentioned that we wrote a book about. Kingston, do you want to talk about the activism that you've done this year?
Watching documentaries, Blackfish the Cove, and the story of Keiko. Reading magazines and books, PETA Kids, SPCA, Bark Magazine, Humane
Society.
Watching Sea Shepherd documentaries, learning about Paul Watson, and I wrote a letter to local MP asking to support the Bill S-203. I signed Bill S-203. And watching Senate hearings on the Bill S-203. Watching local news stories about the aquarium, signed up and spoke at the Vancouver Parks Board meeting. Made signs to hold up at ETT and other aquarium protesters. I met Jen Goodall and asked her a question. I read books and videos on Wood Century's program and Jen Goodall attending vegan family potlucks, volunteering at the Happy Herd, attended chicken vigil and animals in labs, protests, and leafleting, has become an expert at reading labels and reminding my mom that's tested on animals.
Wow, you do so much, Kingston. I can't believe all that.
That's a lifetime's worth of activism, I think. That was a lot.
Yeah, I don't know any 13-year-old that wrote a letter to the local MP asking for support on a bill. And the bill that Kingston was talking about was Bill S-203, which is to ban the captivity of whales, cetaceans, and dolphins and porpoises in Canada.
Yeah.
Right. So good job.
Kingston, today is our Mother's Day show. His Mother's Day is this Sunday. So when you think about how lucky you are to have such a wonderful mom, what are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for helping me with all my activities and protests and all that kind of stuff and how she helps me, like, on my activities.
You do have a fabulous mom, Kingston. I really think you're such an inspiration, and this is why we have you on the show today, because both of you inspire me. I would love for more mothers to see that it is possible to make time to help animals in our busy lives, and even kids can do it. I mean, I just can't believe that long list of things that you've done, and I think that we need to actually edit our website and put that up there to give other people ideas. And I see you quite regularly. We do a lot of events together, don't we?
Yep.
Yeah, we go to the aquarium, and you are the star leafleter. So you go up to all the kids in the lineup, and you're very friendly and nice, and you hand out information.
Yeah.
And how does that go for you?
It goes really good helping people and kids not going to the Vancouver Aquarium and zoos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really need people like you, because I think that people are more likely to take a leaflet from your hand than from ours.
And
we get a lot of people that argue with us, right? But do you think that you get that from people as much?
Yes, I do.
You do? Why don't you tell us a quick little story about, can you think of anything on the spot about when you've been handing out leaflets?
I don't really know.
You can't think of one? Mm-mm, I can think of some. I mean, I get a lot of people that say that we're wrong and we don't know what we're talking about and we need to get jobs. You probably haven't heard that one. Nobody expects you to have a job, but maybe they've told you that you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. I don't know. But we are on the right side of justice here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm so glad to have you. So I just want to know, how do the two of you spend your time together? You are a family just of two.
Yes,
what do
I
you
am.
Do? What keeps you busy?
I don't know.
Jillian's got an answer for that one for us.
Well, we do a self-directed learning curriculum, which allows Kingston to follow his passions. We spend a lot of time in the car driving to places for different activities like swimming lessons, musical theater, track and field, and mountain biking. And at the end of the week, like for today, we attend a group at Bridgen and Rich where we learn chanting and Sanskrit, meditation, mindfulness, mixed with hip hop and vegan snacks. Do you want to talk about your project, Kingston, that you're really excited about? The YouTube video?
Oh, YouTube video. Let's hear about this, Kingston.
Well, on my show, I'm going to talk about animal rights and share vegan recipes and take my show on the road and interview vegans in the community.
Okay, so you said that really fast, so we're just going to have your mom say it again for us.
So Kingston is on the verge of putting out a YouTube channel and book called King Zoom the Vegan Kid. And he's going to talk about animal rights on the show, do some vegan baking or cooking, and interview people.
That sounds awesome. So, Kingston, I know you recently met Jane Goodall when she was here in Vancouver. That's really special. Not everyone gets to meet her. So can you tell us about that experience? What was it like to meet such a champion for the animals?
It's just cool to see her up close. I saw her on TED Talks and Netflix. She brings a chimpanzee stuffy with a banana called Mr. H. I was shy to ask her a question, but people encouraged me and I was able to ask her a question.
What question did you ask her? Do you remember?
No, I actually forgot.
It was about the aquarium.
About sea pens and zoos, but I actually forgot what my question.
Well, I remember what your question was. You wanted her opinion on why we have sanctuaries for all kinds of other animals, but we don't have anything yet for sea animals that are in captivity in aquariums around the world, because you are a Vancouver Aquarium animal rights activist, aren't you?
Yes.
And right now there are no sea sanctuaries, but we could be building them.
Yeah.
And so you wanted to know her opinion on that, right? I mean, there are some sea sanctuaries in the world, but the ones that could be built here in Canada, we want the Vancouver Aquarium to start thinking about and talking about, right?
Yeah.
Because that would be a better home for them than in the pools. Isn't that right?
Yes, it is.
And do you remember what Jane said?
I actually forgot what it was.
Maybe your mom remembers because she was there.
Something about space, that it was easier to build a sanctuary on land than in the sea.
Okay. Well, we disagree. And so does Dr. Lori Marino. So maybe Jane Goodall isn't the expert on sea animals.
They are looking into off the coast of Vancouver Island. So
yes,
apparently we've
right.
got space there.
And,
yeah.
And what we're always trying to say is if the aquarium would take the millions of dollars that they have slated for their expansion of their tanks, they could take a fraction of that money and they could invest
they
in these
up.
Sea sanctuaries. And this is a real possibility. But of course, there's no money in ticket sales there, so perhaps maybe not such a great idea for some. So, another question that we have for Kingston. What goals do you want to achieve in your future? You seem quite passionate about animal rights advocacy.
That's what my goal is, to make a YouTube channel to talk about animal activism and share vegan recipes. It's actually going to air by the summertime. I am going to have a microphone and interview compassionate people. And I'm also going to start vegan kids group details.
Okay, so you're going to have a YouTube channel and talk about your animal activism and share vegan recipes. Are you going to be cooking?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. So we'll know how to do it. And you said it's going to be on air by the summertime, and you're going to have a microphone and interview compassionate people.
Yeah.
And you're going to start a vegan kids group.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I think this is going to just blow up. I think everybody's going to be watching your videos. I will be sharing those on Facebook. And Allison, you've got a question.
Yeah, you know, I'm very inspired by listening to the interviews today that we had with Anna Pippas, first of all, and now Jillian here with Kingston. Jillian, what Mother's Day message do you have for other moms out there today?
Happy Mother's Day. And remember that you are powerful and influential, not only to your children, but your community and the world. And we together have the power to change, and that change can begin on our dinner table tonight.
Yeah, it's not hard. And in our interview with Anna, she also mentioned that she puts her recipes out on Easy Animal Free on Instagram if you want some recipe ideas. And she's a pretty busy mom, so these are really quick recipes. And Kingston, what message do you have for the kids out there today?
I want kids to not go to aquariums or zoos and not eat meat and dairy. I want kids to tell them that they can do lots to help the animals, like a beach cleanup, widening netters, create a presentation, and start a petition. Most importantly, come and say hi to us tomorrow at Empty the Tanks.
Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing some more kids tomorrow. That's going to be exciting.
Right.
And feel free to come up and say hi to us.
11 o'clock at the aquarium. The kids can come and meet you and your mom, right?
Yeah.
And what's the event called tomorrow? Do you remember?
It's going to be Empty the Tanks.
Empty the Tanks. And this is a worldwide event at every aquarium where hundreds of activists come out and speak for the animals.
Yeah.
And you'll be handing out leaflets?
Yes, I am.
Yes, you will. We always put you to work. We don't pay you, but we put you to work. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much for being here today.
You
Thanks,
too. Jen.
Thanks. Love to you guys. Happy Mother's Day, Jillian.
Thank
Happy
you.
Happy Mother's Day. So you have been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please tune into next week's show. Next week is May 19th. And May is actually International Respect for Chickens Month. So we'll be celebrating this month for the chickens on next week's show. Please drop us a line on our Facebook and check out our website. Our website's animalvoices.org. You can listen to past shows there. Our Facebook is Animal Voices Vancouver, and we are on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com if you have any questions or anything that you'd like us to have on the show. We appreciate that. So to end today's show, we have a song called Truth by Alexander. It's dedicated to the activists who speak out for what's right and to those in society who perhaps need to reflect upon living more into their truth and do right by animals. This is for you, to John Nightingale, and to everyone. Happy Mother's Day for this weekend. Remember to be kind to the animals, and tune in for Radio Eco Shop coming up soon.
Defenses, but your defenses, if you can't stand to feel the pain, then you are senseless. Senseless. I've grown up some different kind of fire. And when the darkness comes, let it inside you. Your darkness is shining. My darkness is shining. Seen a million number doors on the horizon. Now which is the future you're choosing before you gon' die? And I'll tell you about a secret I've been undermined. Every little lie in this world come from the vine. Say you're my love, say you're my home. Till my chin back, slit my throat. Take a bath in my blood, get to know me. All out of my secrets. All my enemies are turning into my teachers. Speak up, like blind in no way dividing. What's yours or mine when everything shines?